Welcome to Parents' Perspective. For the next few months, I continued to grapple with how I could go back into television. I was on the outskirts of this historic event of September 11th and couldn't stand it. Instead of field producing in Afghanistan, I was breastfeeding at Starbucks. For the first time ever, my clear career path was suddenly as opaque as the Calvin Klein tights I used to wear to work. Had motherhood permanently obstructed my big career plans? As I wrestled with what to do, I looked for support beyond the new mommy group and asked other women about how they handled this tricky work-family quandary. When I shared my concerns about how to still have a fantastic career and still be a great mommy, I found that I wasn't alone. The balance everyone talks about, that holy grail for working moms, was much more nuanced and complicated than we had ever anticipated. The dirty truth that no one wants to admit is that the world works against the stay-at-work mom. We have been led to believe that career women could gracefully maneuver motherhood into already bustling lives. But ask any new mom, and we're simply stumbling along blindly, trying to stay afoot, to please everyone, and to make sense of our suddenly conflicted identities. Every mother I met seemed desperate to hear about how other women strike that precarious balance in their lives between motherhood and career. How do they do it? This is an excerpt from the book, How She Really Does It, by Wendy Sachs. From a parent's perspective, how can we better understand what drives so many young mothers who decide to return to their careers within just a few months after the birth of their young children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today has researched the issues driving stay-at-work moms in today's world. Wendy Sachs is a freelance television producer. Previously, she was an associate producer at Dateline NBC, where she covered everything from hour-long legal and investigative stories to breaking news and feature spots. Her stories have earned such honors as an Emmy and an Amnesty International USA Media Spotlight Award. She's married and the mother of two young children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Wendy.
Thank you for having me.
Wendy, why did you want to write a book about stay-at-work moms?
Well, I was at a crossroads myself, and I was sort of in flux after I had my first child about 3.5 years ago. And I'd always had a big career. I was a press secretary on Capitol Hill. I had worked in television. So much of my identity was defined by my career. And then I had a baby, and I really didn't know how I was going to balance it all. How was I going to still have this very exciting, challenging career that, quite frankly, had me on the road traveling a lot and had me working late hours? And how was I going to be there for my baby? I wanted to be able to go to the play dates or go to a music class or be on the playground. And I started looking around, and I found that there were so many people who were going through the same conflict that I was. They were unsure of what to do next. They didn't feel like they had a clear path guiding them into what direction to take.
How did you personally decide to continue in this very demanding career path you were on?
Well, quite frankly, I took a little bit of a sabbatical by writing the book. That was sort of my escape. I decided, well, if I don't really know what to do next, and I'm finding that all of these other women are also feeling very ambivalent and confused, maybe I should start talking to some women who have done it all. And I started looking at very kind of high voltage women, people like Madeleine Albright or Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I thought to myself, well, how did Madeleine Albright go on to become Secretary of State and also have three children? And how did Ruth Bader Ginsburg become Supreme Court Justice and also raised three children? And so I sort of started from there and decided I wanted to interview these kind of well-known women who have these extraordinary lives. And quite frankly, it gave me a little bit of a time off to figure out what I was going to do next. This book very much is a personal journey for me, figuring out what I'm going to do next. And I actually went back into freelance producing after the book was finished, but it did give me some time to think about my choices.
Did you end up admiring these women more after you heard their stories, or realizing that maybe the pedestals we've put these women on are a little too high?
You know, every woman who I interviewed, and I say this wholeheartedly, every woman who I interviewed really inspired me. I left every interview feeling so jazzed up, so excited, because they were so different. The women come from all different backgrounds and were in various careers, and yet they loved what they were doing, and they were so energized, and they felt that they were being good mothers, and they loved their careers. And I walked out thinking, well, these women really are doing it. You know, I don't like to use the term doing it all or having it all the way that the kind of – that was the catchphrase of the baby boomer generation. I think our generation, our expectations are just a little bit more realistic. We want to have a family and we want to have a career. And so I've started to use the expression that we want to have at least a little bit of it all of the time. You know, it's more of the – many pots on the stove simmering rather than one pot boiling. And I think when you have small children, you realize you may have to turn down your career a little bit. You may have to slow things down, but you still want to keep your foot in the door. You still want to be working in some capacity. And then perhaps when they're older, you can amp up again. And that's what it's about. It's about more of a kind of a zigzag that we're doing rather than we're not men. We don't go in a linear direction. We have to take little pit stops or we take little detours along the way, and that's okay. And that's what I found from talking to all these different women. People had done all different types of things. Many had actually switched their careers or went back to school and re-educated themselves or started their own businesses. They all did different things. And they were all very happy and they were all succeeding at both having a family and having a career.
You alluded to the diversity of the group that you interviewed and mentioned two very high-profile women. Would you tell us about some of the others?
I did really try to reach out to a wide variety of women. I do want to say that the one commonality is that all of the women have a college degree. And I think that's a very important factor because people who have a college education believe they have more choices because they have the education and quite frankly, they often do have more choices. So this book is written about women who believe that they grew up believing that they had a lot of choices because of their education. With that said, the women are spanned from across the country, from Seattle to Miami, from the West Coast to the East Coast to the South to the North, at various professions. Some of the famous women I interviewed were the wedding designer and couture designer Vera Wang, Bobby Brown, who's the makeup mogul and CEO of her own company, Ann Curry, the NBC Today Show news anchor, Soledad O'Brien, the CNN news anchor, Cynthia Nixon, the actress from Sex and the City, the former governor of Massachusetts, Jane Swift, who made international headlines when she gave birth to twins in office. She was the first governor to ever do that. She actually was one of my favorite stories. There was a lot of controversy surrounding her term in office, which everyone seems to know about, even outside of Massachusetts. And she decided not to run for a re-election. She had three girls under 3 years old at that time. She was commuting 6 hours a day, literally spanning the entire Massachusetts Turnpike to get to work because her family was living in the Berkshires and she was living in Boston. The media just lambasted her. They just went after her because everything from the way she was caring for her children, the way she was neglecting her children, the way she was neglecting the government, she couldn't win. And she decided that she was not going to run for re-election. And she's now actually working at a venture capital firm. She is the breadwinner of her family. She doesn't come from a wealthy background, unlike a lot of other politicians. She's not a trust fund baby. She has to work and she loves to work. I actually interviewed her twice, once while she was still the governor, and then 2 years later, I went to her office in Boston at the venture capital firm, and she was a different person. I mean, literally, physically, looks-wise, her hair was lighter, her demeanor was lighter. She was happy. She was telling me how she was actually on the preschool committee at her children's school. And yes, she's still working tremendously, but she's feeling like she's integrating her family and her career life. And she entertains the idea of, again, running for office, but, down the road. Mm-hmm. And she, to me, was just so real. And that's what I was looking for in the interviews, women who candidly shared their stories. And she talked about the stress of running for office and the hardship she faced.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on stay-at-work moms.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Wendy Sachs, author of How She Really Does It, The Secrets of Success from Stay-at-Work Moms, about women returning to their careers while raising even very young children. You know, it seems to me when we talk about college-educated women mm-hmm. going back to work and being able to deal with their children and so forth, there's an elephant in the room that we're really not talking about, mm-hmm. and that is the non-college-educated help who come from other countries mm-hmm. or impoverished backgrounds, without whom these wonderful, fulfilling jobs that the college-educated group is having wouldn't be possible.
Absolutely. I have a babysitter at home. She also comes from the Caribbean, as do many babysitters. It's so multidimensional. And from a policy point of view, we should be allowing more women to come into this country and men, but largely it's women who take care of children. We should open our doors and make them legal. There's a problem that we don't make enough people legal. And I think part of the reason that there are so many women without the educations and who, as you said, come from impoverished countries, it's because we don't really value childcare in this country. We don't pay people enough to take care of our own children. We don't have enough daycares to take care of our own children. Linda, you were saying to me before we started the interview about your daughter-in-law and nanny versus daycare, which route are they going to go? So many people are in that position. Everyone needs childcare, and childcare is very undervalued in our society, and there's sort of not enough of it. There's not enough good quality daycare centers. We don't have community daycare in our country. It's not funded by the government. It's hard to access. It's very expensive. It is a problem, for sure.
Do you want to tell us about some of the people who are not so well known?
Absolutely. One of my favorite stories is a woman who, she's a military mom or a military wife. She lives in Fort Polk, Louisiana. And her husband had been shipped off to Iraq for about 2 years, and she had two small children at home. And she had been an English teacher, and she really loved her job. But the time that her husband was away was really taking a toll on her son, and she realized she needed to make some changes to be around for her six-year-old. And she had been running a little Mary Kay business on the side, which seems to be very popular. It's a nice way for people to earn some extra money. And she decided to go full time and quit her English teaching job and do Mary Kay full time. And she did phenomenally well. She won the Grand Prix. She won, I think then she was up for another car. She was told me she had doubled her salary by doing Mary Kay. She was working from home. Let me emphasize that. She was being able to work on her own time schedule, be around for her children. And she was earning double her income. And she had said to me, I guess it was about a year ago when all the soldiers were supposed to be coming home for Easter. And at the last minute, they all found out that no one was returning home. She was devastated. It was the weekend before Easter. And she felt that she needed to get to her mother's house, and her mother lives in another state. She needed to buy 3 airplane tickets for herself and her children. And she said, with my Mary Kay money, I was able to do that. I didn't have to put this on a credit card. I didn't have to worry about the finance charges. I could take care of myself, and that felt fantastic. And I think that's what's a really kind of empowering story for a bunch of reasons. Women do need to be able to take care of themselves. Let's not forget that half of all marriages do end in divorce in this country. And that's something that no one really talks about when they talk about the choice of working or not working or staying at home versus staying in your career. Women do need to still protect themselves financially and otherwise.
What were the key results of your research besides finding out that we value cosmetics more in this country than education?
What I found were that women really do want to continue working after they have children. They're just not really clear how to always do it. Some jobs make it easier to get back into the workforce. Others don't. I found that women are actually very creative in figuring out how they're going to do it for themselves and kind of figuring out flexible arrangements and going to their employers and suggesting ways to make it work so everyone's happy. I also found that a lot of women were going out on their own and starting their own businesses. Right now, there's a fantastic figure that shows that women in this country are starting businesses at a rate double that of men. Women are very creative, and these are women who don't have MBAs necessarily. It's not women who all of their lives wanted to go into business for themselves, but they're finding little niches in the marketplace. Often that happens after they become a mother, and they see a product that they believe should be made, or they just have an idea. And I think women just generally think outside of the box a little bit more.
In your book, you state that being a working mom creates a happier marriage, that a lot of the people you interviewed felt that way. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me with all the added stress of two careers in a family, I want to know how this is so.
Kind of a funny thing to say, right? It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But the truth is that doing something for yourself, having an identity separate that of raising your children, really does fill your sense of self-esteem. And I think that's a very important factor in a marriage. When you're feeling good about yourself, you can feel good about your relationship and your children and your partner. And there's an overall feeling of well-being. And other studies, not just my own research or my own interviews, have backed that up, that women who are feeling good about themselves, and generally these are the women who have something aside from raising their children, do believe that their marriages are happier. There's more equality in the marriage. Again, the finances come into it. When someone stops working, I heard time and time again, and again, other research has shown this, that they believe that there's an imbalance, a sort of power change, a power shift, if you will, in the marriage because you're no longer bringing in the money. And it becomes a more traditional family model that a lot of women are really uncomfortable with.
You're talking about women who are earning a salary. What about women who become volunteers with a tremendous commitment to whatever the cause is? How does that play out in a marriage?
Well, I think that's fantastic. And I think that doing philanthropy, being involved in your schools, I think anything that's independent of raising your children that fills your sense of self-esteem and makes you feel better about what you're doing obviously is going to have a great impact on your marriage and because you're feeling good. You know, I think it's not just about having a career, but doing something where you're feeling challenged and stimulated and that you're contributing. Everyone wants to feel smart at the end of the day. I mean, across the spectrum, you want to feel smart. And I think that women who aren't working outside of the home in whatever capacity that may be, working voluntarily or working for a salary, often feel like they're not so smart anymore. Like what happened to all of their skills? Like they're not being valued. So it's a matter of figuring out where you can have value. And of course, raising your children is the most important thing you can do. And I don't want to stoke the mommy wars. And that wasn't my intention in writing the book. I was just really responding to feeling that women who are working feel like they have to apologize for continuing to work. And that's what I wanted to say. We shouldn't have to apologize for that. We should feel good about it.
I think it's very clear in your book that being a mommy is the most important thing. And that's why there's a problem, because it's very hard to be the mommy when you're away, when the child is awake. And you want the child, for example, to stay awake later, because when you get home, you want to play with that little person or those little people. And you want your weekends. You cherish that time. If you don't work weekends, you cherish that time with your child, with your husband, you know, with your family. I think that comes across very clearly.
Good.
In your book, what are you doing? You've written the book. You said you took sort of, it was sort of a sabbatical. Now, Sandy and I have written books, and we know it's no sabbatical.
Well, I do say that in jest, sort of. Writing the book was absolutely full-time. In fact, I never felt more out of balance than when I was writing the book because it was such a full-time job. Right now, I'm obviously out there promoting the book, and I'm starting to do some freelance producing again and thinking about maybe another book that I could write also. Doing it, even though it was such a full-time job, I was able to do it not from home. I actually wrote my entire book from Starbucks because as anyone with young children know, you can't actually work from home when you have young children. So Starbucks was my office. But it did allow me the ability to take my son to preschool, pick him up from preschool, be there at a soccer game in the middle of the afternoon if I wanted to be, if I had the time to do it. There is a little bit more flexibility. And that is sort of what I discovered that women want. They just want some more flexibility.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on stay-at-work moms.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Wendy Sachs, author of How She Really Does It, The Secrets of Success from Stay-at-Work Moms, about women returning to their careers while raising even very young children.
The big issue that we haven't dealt with here that's behind all of what we're talking about is guilt. Stay-at-home moms have guilt because they're feeling like they should be back in their careers. Stay-at-work moms have guilt because they feel like they're not giving enough time to their children. There's enough to go around, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. I always feel guilty. I wrote this book and I still feel guilty. I think guilt just goes hand in hand with being a mom. In my head, it's always just sort of lingering there in my heart. I always feel like that sort of churning happening. Am I spending enough time? I'm looking at the clock. I have two children, so it's a matter of balancing, you know, who I'm with at what time. And it's very hard. But what I found was very interesting in my book, I think there's this misnomer that working mothers feel guilty for working. At least that's what I thought. That's how I approached the topic. But what I found was really interesting is that none of the women told me they felt guilty for working. They felt guilty for doing anything for themselves. Working was something they had to do. They liked to do it. And quite frankly, they needed it to help pay their mortgage. Even the women who could afford not to never told me they felt guilty about working. Soledad O'Brien, the CNN news anchor, actually said to me, who financially doesn't need to work. She said to me, she absolutely feels no guilt about working. Her mother worked. She always knew that she would. She feels guilty if she's going to get a manicure or a pedicure. Mm-hmm. That to her is wasted time. That's when she should be with her children. And that's what I found. The real crunch is having any me time. For a working mother, that's very hard. You just feel if you're not at work and if you're not with your children, you know, you don't have any time for yourself.
This goes back to how we are raising our girls, doesn't it? For every generation we can think of, if women take time out for themselves, they feel guilty. Do men feel guilty going to play golf or going to a ball game? Are men thinking at the office that Johnny has a dentist appointment? What is going on here?
Absolutely not. And that's part of the myth of motherhood. We put so much pressure on mothers to be superhuman, quite frankly. You know, I say in my book that we've elevated and devalued motherhood at the same time. And I think it's very true. I don't think men, first of all, biologically, I don't think men have that same kind of inner churning that we do, that women feel, or that same connection or bond, that physical connection or bond to their children. Not to say that dads don't love their children. They do. It's different, though. This is more of a woman's issue. And I'm not quite sure. I think it's a societal thing and a biological thing, and it's kind of intertwined. Right now, as I'm doing this interview, I thought to myself 5 minutes ago, tomorrow is my son's birthday. I need to order his ice cream cake. He's expecting an ice cream cake. I haven't done that yet. I'm not coming home till very late tonight. I better get on the phone after this interview to order the ice cream cake. My husband was sitting here. That thought would never cross his mind. You know, women multitask in their heads. There's a lot of noise going on there all the time of, you know, who needs to be taken care of and what we need to be doing at all times. So I do think it's a woman's issue. I think that men can go play golf and take care of themselves and not feel the guilt. Women feel it more.
There's really a message, it seems, for how we're going to raise our children, how the next generation is going to be raised. Clearly, men have the capacity to think about the ice cream cake.
Yeah.
It's just not, we're not giving them that job.
We're not giving them that job. It's true. Women take on more of the responsibilities at home. I think twofold, because we want to. I think women don't really like to relinquish the connection to their children and feeling like they should be there. They tend to be the ones who want to go to the doctor's appointments and want to go to the parent-teacher conferences. Some dads are good at that. A lot aren't. It's just sort of the way that it is. And I think we're probably not asking enough from our spouses. I mean, I think that's what you're asking. We're not. We need to demand a little bit more.
No husband says, my wife helps me take care of the children.
That's true. That very few do.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners, Wendy, in addition to your book, How She Really Does It, Secrets of Successful Stay-at-Work Moms? Are there other places people could go to get more information on this topic?
Absolutely. Working Mother magazine every year does a list of the top 100 companies to work for. And it's a fantastic compilation. And I think by going to the Working Mother magazine, you can actually look at the companies that are more, I don't want to call them female friendly, but family friendly. And I definitely suggest to people who are looking to switch jobs or move into a different place because they're feeling that they're not having enough flexibility in their job, that they turn to Working Mother magazine, who does this annual survey, which is very helpful. There's another organization called Catalyst, and they can be found on the web, www.catalyst.com. And their reason for being is to promote women in business and in the workplace. And they offer on their website lots of suggestions of how to make work work for you. And they also have a lot of research that I found very helpful when I was putting together my own book. And I would also suggest going to some of the other mommy websites that all seem to have working mother areas, for instance, babycenter.com, urbanbaby.com, which is found nationwide in lots of big cities. Those are all very helpful resources for women who are looking for a community of other women to talk to or looking for ideas of how to transition their lives.
Wendy, do you have a website?
I do. My website address is www.stayatworkmom.com.
Well, Wendy Sachs, you have been a wonderful resource for working women and all adults who really care about children. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Wendy Sachs' new book, How She Really Does It, Secrets of Successful Stay-at-Work Moms. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. Mention show number 259 and tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. We'd like to remind you about some important toll-free numbers for parents and kids. National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-800-THE-LOST. That's 1-800-843-5678. And the National Runaway Switchboard, 1-800-621-4000. 1-800-621-4000. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.